This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Should San Antonio become a sanctuary city? All are we already one, just unofficially? Well, what is a sanctuary city? There's no legal definition, but it's understood to be a city where the official policy is not to have police officers asking people that they stop about their legal residency status, or for the county jail not to turn over all prisoners who are here illegally to immigration for deportation. This has become a hot issue. There have been some high-profile murders across the nation committed by men who were in the country illegally, arrested, and then released before committing that fatal crime. Some people say that crime could have been avoided had they not been in a sanctuary city. Now, North Carolina has passed a law banning sanctuary cities, and Governor Greg Abbott wants a similar law for Texas. So we're going to spend the next hour talking about sanctuary cities. We want you to be part of our conversation. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. What do you think about San Antonio being a sanctuary city? Should it become a sanctuary city? Should we take measures to make sure it's not a sanctuary city? 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. Our first guest we have Bexar County Sheriff Susan Pamelu. Thank you very much, Sheriff Pamelu. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely.
And we have Manuel Mendina. He is the chairman of the Bexar County Democrats. Manuel.
Thanks for the invite.
And Catalina Canizales, she is a deportation defense coordinator at United We Dream, and she herself is in the country without legal authorization, but she is here legally now under DACA. Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you for having me.
All right. So let me ask you, Sheriff, what is the policy at the Bexar County Jail when it comes to arresting people who are not in the country legally?
Well, when someone is arrested here in Bexar County by any jurisdiction, what we do is we have to identify that individual and confirm their identity. And when we can't confirm their citizenship, then we advise Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and they make a determination of the individual's citizenship and whether or not they are here legally. And if ICE determines that they need to put an immigration detainer on that individual, then we work with them to make sure that when the state charges are satisfied, either the individual gets bail, they go to court, they've served their sentence, that then we make that transfer to the federal government.
So that's for anyone and everyone who ends up in the Bexar County Jail as an inmate. They're going to go through this process, and you're letting ICE determine what happens to that person in regards to being deported or not.
That's correct. And of course, that used to be under the law of policy from Department of Justice Secure Communities Act, which has been revised and now is known as Priority Enforcement Program. But let's go back before that. When someone is arrested in Bexar County, when we arrest someone, it's based on probable cause that they've committed a crime. And so someone's immigration status is not a basis for us determining that they should be arrested.
Correct. But there are people who are arrested and they do end up in jail. And they actually, they were just suspects, isn't that right? They end up in the Bexar County Jail and they haven't gone to trial yet and haven't been convicted of anything, right?
That's correct, because about 60% of those who are in our jail are awaiting trial. They've been charged or indicted and they're awaiting trial. And I think it's important to understand there, by our Constitution, they are presumed innocent until proven guilty. But when they come into our custody, because we have had probable cause to suspect that they have committed a crime or been involved in a crime, that's how they come into our jurisdiction.
Yes. And if that person, as a suspect, maybe they were at the wrong place at the wrong time, not everyone who's a suspect who gets arrested ends up in jail, goes through the process, is convicted. Does that person still end up, if they were here illegally, do they still go through this ICE process?
If we can't confirm their citizenship and their immigration status, we advise ICE, and they make that determination.
So this person may not actually have committed a crime, and then it's still, because they ended up in the county jail as a suspect, they could be deported.
That could be the case. But that decision is made by ICE.
Now, over in Dallas County, the Dallas County Sheriff, Lupe Valdez, she is taking heat from Governor Greg Abbott. He says that she is softening her approach. She says that she is following federal procedures in trying to basically do triage on the people that she releases to ICE and giving the most violent offenders first. Is that something that we follow in Bexar County?
Let me say that every Texas peace officer, every licensed peace officer, including myself, when we are sworn in, and I did this as a when I was sworn in as the sheriff, I raised my right hand and I said, I will support and defend the Constitution and laws of the United States and the laws and Constitution of the state of Texas, so help me God. That's what my job is. My job is to enforce the laws and to assure that, you know, and it has, enforcing the laws has nothing to do with partisanship, immigration status, gender, race, ethnicity, any of those things. It's a matter of if someone has committed a crime or we have probable cause that they have, we arrest them.
Yes. And so back to this issue of under the federal law, new guidelines released by the federal government regarding who to give over to ICE, they're asking for the most violent offenders and not so much the nonviolent offenders. And does that have any impact on what you're doing?
Well, the like I said, and to respond to that again, David.
Because I can't tell if that was a yes or a no. Yes, you're following these guidelines. No, you're not following these guidelines.
We are following those guidelines, and we provide that the information on individuals that are arrested to ICE, and they make the determination.
Okay. All right. So we're talking about sanctuary cities here on The Source. That's Sheriff Pamela, and I definitely want to thank her for coming in here and answering and straightening out these questions, because we've had so many so many people aren't really sure what's happening in San Antonio in regards to sanctuary cities. We know that Austin, Dallas, and Houston are regarded ones, but not San Antonio. And why is that? Could that change? People are pushing for San Antonio to become an official sanctuary city. We want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're going to talk to our other guest when we come back from the break in 1 minute. This is The Source on KSTX.
David Plouffe ran then-Senator Obama's campaign in 2008. Now he's running a new one for Uber and its role in this economy. The story next time on Marketplace from APM.
You can hear Marketplace this evening from 6:30 to 7 on KSTX.
Support for KSTX comes from Humana. Working together with doctors, Humana is focused on how to simplify population health in ways designed to help doctors in the San Antonio area improve the health of their patients. Learn more at humana.com/population health. Support for KSTX comes from the annual Almost Park Harris Uptown Art Stroll. This Saturday, 10 to 5 and Sunday, noon to 5. The event is open to the public with over 50 artists exhibiting at 18 locations. More at uptownartstroll.org.
Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Sanctuary cities, it's a story that is in the news. We're trying to figure out where San Antonio is on that gauge. We've been hearing from Bexar County Sheriff Susan Pamerlo. And let's get to our other guest. We have Manuel Medina. He is the chairman of the Bexar County Democrats. And also Carolina Canizales. She is with United We Dream, and she herself is in the country without legal authorization, but she is here under DACA legally. So let me ask you, Manuel, about, is there an effort, I've heard that there is, to make San Antonio a sanctuary city. What's going on there?
Yes, it's called the San Antonio Sanctuary Movement. And specifically, when it comes to sanctuary cities, we're talking about good people. We're talking about the 99.9% of undocumented immigrants that are out there paying their taxes, raising family, contributing to society. No one's here to defend that 0.1% of individuals that are the bad apples. We're talking about the good people. We're talking about protecting the good people and deporting the bad people. Because the truth of the matter is, across the country, there's over 200 sanctuary cities. In Texas, there's 13 sanctuary cities. In fact, San Antonio is the largest city in the country that is not a sanctuary city. And each one of those cities, they defined what a sanctuary city is to them. Here locally, we've defined it as three specific objectives. One, Chief McManus's immigration policy that has kept our community safe, that is working. Let's make it permanent. Fortunately, the Governance Committee of the San Antonio City Council agreed with that last week, and we're going to put his immigration policies in the SAPD.
So what are those
manual
policies?
Well, it begins with police officers are not immigration officers. They won't be asking immigration status. They won't participate in immigration raids. They won't be taking calls of come pick up the illegal that lives next door. They'll be accepting passports and matricula consulares as proper ID. Those are five specific things that are going to be going into the manual, and we're very appreciative, but it's much more than that, because that's what's going on in the streets. What happens when someone innocent somehow is at the doorsteps of the city or the county jail? As we know, over the last 8 years, we've had a program called Secure Communities. Those have been the guidelines by which cities and counties have worked with ICE. Fact is, that program was canceled November of last year because it wasn't working. It was unconstitutional. It became an unfunded mandate. And they were 80% of the people that they were deporting were individuals that were innocent, not convicted of anything, right, or that were convicted of minor traffic offenses.
So I don't know if I got you off pace there, but I said, you said there were three things that you were shooting for to make San Antonio a sanctuary city. You talked about Chief McManus's rules, and you wanted them permanent. And what were the two and three?
The second is we've got to stop following the procedures and guidelines of the old program, Secure Communities. And we're ready to take the leap of faith and work with immigration on their new program called PEP, Priority Enforcement Program, assuming that it doesn't fall into the dragnet that the prior program became. And that's why it's important that the sheriff tell us, I mean, what agreement does she actually have with ICE to do this? Because this is not a federal law. This is a federal program. And we normally opt in and roll in or coordinate in our form or fashion with federal programs. It's not a law. So how are we coordinating with ICE specifically? How has she retrained her officers? Because the biggest difference between the old program and the new program, in the old program, if you were just arrested or detained, you were in the deportation pipeline. In the new program, you first have to be convicted of a serious offense before you're in that deportation pipeline.
So, okay, number three.
And number three, we want a citizens advisory committee so that we're making sure the implementation of this PEP program actually achieves the goal, which is to protect the good people, deport the bad people, and it doesn't become an unfunded mandate for the city of San Antonio.
So this PEP program, that impacts what's happening at the county jail. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it does. The city.
So if you're talking about city procedures, you got to go to the county, or even to the sheriff, because, I mean, she's a sheriff. You know, so how is she?
You first have to go to your city detention center and your magistrate's office. Under what guidelines and do they work with immigration? True, we're the biggest client of the county, so we're hoping that our biggest client will believe in our values too. So we want to set the guidelines there as well eventually. But the first step is to define what our values are here in San Antonio, and we're taking that leap of faith. Let's enroll, let's coordinate, let's participate in PEP, but let's make sure that it actually achieves its specific objective, which is to protect good people and deport bad people.
All right, so let's get the Sheriff Pamerlo to react to that. Are you familiar with PEP?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, to alleviate Mr. Medina's concern, we switched from Secure Communities Act to the Priority Enforcement Program about a year ago. I mean, we had already implemented this. And so it is, and again, it's ICE who makes the decision on whether or not individuals fall into the category of individuals who have committed dangerous crimes. And so it's them who make that decision. So we've already implemented that. And as well, just to clarify, there's not a city detention center. It is a joint city and county central magistrate where the city detention officers process individuals coming in, but there's only one detention center, adult detention center in Bexar County, and the sheriff's office operates that.
Exactly, and the city, when there's a city budget dedicated to the magistrates and city/county detention center, and therefore the city should have a say in how that detention center is run. But there's a big difference between the old program and the new program, Sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
In the old program, there were just one type of detainers. In the new program, there's a thing called notifications. That's when the city or the county notifies ICE that there's an individual about to be released that they should keep an eye on. So right. What is the process that the county is using to notify ICE? And where is that written policy? And that's the concern, because this is something new. How are the officers trained? Are we actually abiding by the new guidelines? That is a major concern.
So you're asking for transparency.
And that's the third. The answer is yes, and that's the goal of this advisory committee.
Okay, all right. So I want to get our other guest here, because Carolina is here, and she is the deportation defense coordinator at United We Dream. And what is your take on, because I know you're here under DACA, and your family have family members that have problems with their legal residency. What's your concern?
So thank you for having me here, and thank you, Sheriff and Manuel Medina, for the points. I think we fail all of the time as we discuss these policies to talk to the people that are actually directly impacted by this. And I also work across the country with many jurisdictions on this, whether they should collaborate with ICE or not as local sheriff departments or as local police departments. So I feel like my mom is undocumented. She has to drive to work. But Texas doesn't give driver's licenses. So I went and asked the sheriff, because I already asked Police McManus, and he had an answer for us that they use discretion at the time of stopping someone without a license. Given that that is a crime in Texas, will my mom end up in Bexar County Jail? And because you do collaborate with ICE, because you do hand them over people without immigration status to ICE, will my mom be under deportation pipeline if she were to be arrested for driving without a driver's license?
Let me clarify your comment. We do not hand someone over to ICE as the first step.
Okay.
We notify ICE. And in fact, they have access to our system when someone is arrested so that they can confirm their citizenship. And if they determine that it is someone that fits their criteria of needing to be detained for ICE, then they tell us that, and we make arrangements with them to transfer.
Right, so what would be the likelihood?
I think it's – I think it's – thank you for taking the time to explain. So I think it's interesting just like the process in which it's being engaged. I don't feel like my mom will not end up in ICE detention even if she stopped just because of a driver's license. Because ICE, you're telling me right now that they have access to your database, and then you're giving them the permission to determine whether they fit or not in the priorities, correct? So if ICE is using not enough prosecutorial discretion, right, which is the term that we always use for undocumented folks who are being funneled through this pipeline of, like, local jails into ICE. So I just wanted to ask, like, does ICE operate within the jail, or is it just that you call them and they have a separate space, or is it ICE already like have open access to your jail? Because that to me means that if they have open access to the jail, they can get to folks like my mom, right, if she were to be arrested for not driving with driver's license.
We advise them And the word, as Mr. Medina used, was notification. We notify ICE so that they know what the circumstances are, and they make a determination based on what the federal government criteria are. So there are some people that, in fact, when we look at the numbers, every month we report the number of days that a federal, someone on a federal detainer is in the jail. We report that monthly. And that number, since we went from Secure Communities Act to the Priority Enforcement Program, essentially has been cut in half since that program has come into being. So that represents much of the decision-making that ICE makes in terms of the program change.
See, one of the biggest programs, and I'll just add this, ICE has specific guidelines with this PEP program, and local, county or city, are not supposed to be notifying ICE when they don't fit in certain parameters. When you have a new program, there's new training and new books to read, and I just feel that the city and the county needs to read them before we start deporting people that shouldn't even – ICE shouldn't be being notified in that situation.
Let me ask you real quick, though, Sheriff Pamerlo. Chief McManus has been very good at talking about when we implement very harsh – and when the police officers become immigration officers, it's hard to police. Do you feel the same way about your law enforcement officers?
Well, to add in a requirement for us to act as federal immigration officers takes additional resources. And our staffing is based on providing law enforcement services in the unincorporated areas of Bexar County. We're not staffed, just like the San Antonio Police Department or other police departments are not staffed, to do this additional work. In fact, there's a well-known case from Arizona where ATF was requiring that local sheriffs serve in their, work as ATF officers. And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was determined that ATF could not require sheriffs in that state or any state.
Exactly. Just like PEP cannot be imposed on a county and a city. So it's not a we have to do it. It's how, whether we decide to enroll and coordinate and participate. And that's the issue that I'm hoping to work with the sheriff
on. Carolina, we're real short on time. Just really quick, how do you think this will impact your community, your
family? To be honest, I think as long as we don't have, like, I think just the fact that there is communication between ICE and the Sheriff's Department makes me be concerned for my community. There's 350 jurisdictions across the country that have decided not to have this communication. So I would like to follow up the conversations and see how we could work better with the Sheriff's Department. I just feel like it doesn't make me feel safe.
Okay.
And it doesn't make people like my mom.
We're having a conversation now, and I want to thank all of you for clearing up some misconceptions we've had in the community. And thank you so much, Bexar County Sheriff Susan Pamerlo, Manuel Medina, the Bexar County Democrats Chairman, and Carolina Canizales of United We Dream. We'll be right back after the NPR news break with more Source. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our conversation about sanctuary cities in Texas, looking at San Antonio. It's not officially a sanctuary city. Some are pushing for that. And so we're going to look at this from another angle. How could this issue play with voters across the state? Will this be a winning issue for conservative state lawmakers in 2017? Or will this activate a Latino base and revitalize a now zombie-like Democratic Party across the state? So will this impact your vote in the future, sanctuary cities? We're now joined by Republican State Senator Connie Burton of District 10 in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And, Senator, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be on today.
So tell me about your thoughts about sanctuary cities.
Well, first of all, it's surprising to me that we're having this discussion about it. Basically what a sanctuary city is those who are in law enforcement are choosing not to enforce the law. And so, we absolutely cannot have that when we have to enforce our laws here in this country and in our state.
Yes. I mean, there are people, this issue that's in the news, and so we want to educate people and give them information and, you know, and hear from lawmakers like yourself. That's why we're having the conversation. And so when you say law enforcement officers not enforcing the law, you want local police officers to enforce federal immigration laws?
What I want them to do is work in cooperation with our federal government and do what's required of them from the federal government. And if they don't, then that means that they are not following the law, and that creates these sanctuary cities. And what that does is it leaves us with law enforcement, like I said, that is not, in fact, enforcing the law. And we are required as a state to provide public safety for all our citizens. And so it's just very simple to me that that our law enforcement actually enforce the laws that are on the book.
Right, but they're different books. So we have a federal book and we have a local book. And so if you want local law enforcement to enforce all federal laws, so that's something that, you know, it would have to be addressed. You'll need more law enforcement.
We're not asking anybody to enforce federal law. We're not asking anybody to deal with immigration. What we're doing, what we're saying is you enforce the laws in the state of Texas, and that you know, that we cooperate with the federal government in what they are asking us to do, and it's really simple. I mean, we owe it again to our citizens of Texas to provide law enforcement, to provide public safety, and they deserve that. They deserve to know that they live, you know, in a city that will be doing that. I mean, if we allow law enforcement to pick and choose what they want to enforce and what they don't, what kind of a place would we be living in? What kind of a state would we be living in? And unfortunately, it's kind of where we're headed with this. And so I think the governor was absolutely right in coming out and saying, you can't just choose, you can't decide basis need, you know, on each of these cases. You have to enforce the law, which is on the books. So that's, you know, I'm fully, I fully believe in that as well.
So you would support a state law that would say a complete ban on sanctuary cities, a law that would say that cities in Texas cannot prohibit law enforcement officers from, or it could require law enforcement officers from asking people for their citizenship papers?
That's not what we're talking about here.
Well, I'm just, help me out then.
Sanctuary cities.
Yeah, well right? I'm just saying, you're saying sanctuary cities. So tell me what your definition of a sanctuary city is then.
Well, my definition is where the local law enforcement does not have to work in cooperation with the federal government keeping those who have already broken the law and they have arrested from staying in the jails for the 48 hours required so that the federal government can then come in and do all the work that they need to do so the federal government could come in and do what they need to do. And what these sanctuary cities are doing is deciding that they're not going to do that. It's not as complicated as many people, and it's not about what a lot of people are making it out to be.
Right.
Again, it's just about enforcing the law and working in cooperation with the federal government.
So anyone arrested who is not here legally should be deported. Is that what you're saying?
Anyone who is arrested because they have broken the law.
No, they're not. People are arrested all the time who have not been broken the law. That's why we have a criminal justice system. People are arrested for suspicion.
Oh, so people are just out arresting people for no reason?
No, that's not. Those are two different things. Take a look at this. There are two different things here. One of them is people get arrested on suspicion of breaking the law.
Okay.
Then they go to court.
Right.
And then they get convicted.
Right.
That's when we know if they're actually a criminal.
Okay. Exactly.
That's the law.
Right. And so what are you saying? So what is wrong with that?
No, I'm saying that if you're arrested, doesn't necessarily make you a criminal.
Right.
And you're saying anyone arrested is a criminal who should be deported, who is here illegally.
When did I say any of that? I think those are your words, not mine.
Okay, all right.
I'm saying that we are a nation of laws, and we must adhere to those laws that we have.
Exactly.
And we have to work in cooperation with the federal government. We do not do immigration law, but we do have to cooperate with the federal government so that they can do their responsibilities. It's not what you're saying it is. It's about the rule of law.
Right. I'm very much about the rule of law and support the rule of law. So, so in the next legislative session, or if there's a special session, you would support a law that would ban sanctuary cities?
Absolutely. And actually what that is, it would be a law telling law enforcement that they have to abide by the law, which is a silliness. It's just actually very silly. You know, to say that we're banning sanctuary cities is actually saying we must adhere to the rule of law. So, again, that's why I say it's a strange conversation to have. We are here, our law enforcement and the legislature is here. I mean, the legislature certainly provides funds for public safety, right? And what we expect from our public safety our personnel is to abide by the rule of law. And so, again, it's not so much banning sanctuary cities as it's saying you must follow the law and protect our citizens and, not let those who may come here, they've broken the law, to release them before the federal government has come in and done the work that they need to do. Because, again, we do work in cooperation with the federal government.
All right. Senator Connie Bruton, thank you so much for joining us and helping us understand your point of view. Republican senator from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and she supports a statewide law that would ban sanctuary cities. Back on The Source in 1 minute. Thank you so much, Senator Bruton, for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about sanctuary cities this hour on The Source. And we're going to talk about the political fallout that could happen from this. Why are we talking about this? Why is this getting so much traction? Let's join in, get comments from Cal Gilson, professor of political science at SMU, and Mark P. Jones, professor of political science at Rice University. And Cal, why sanctuary cities? Why is it such a big deal now?
Well, I want to first note the really surprising commitment of Senator Burton to working with the federal government. I think that's probably the first time she's been quite so adamant about the need of Texas to work closely with the federal government. But the reason she had difficulty defining sanctuary cities is it's not one thing. It is the broad question of the extent to which local law enforcement works closely with the federal government's immigration services. And local law enforcement exercises all kinds of discretion every day about how it's going to enforce the law and how it's going to distribute its law enforcement personnel to best enforce that part of the legal code that they have time to get to that day. And so what's happening here in Dallas is Sheriff Lupe Valdez is trying to fine-tune which of the undocumented people who comes through the Dallas County Jail they're going to hold long enough for the federal government to review as to their legal status. So every morning when I get on the tollway, which has a speed limit of 70 miles an hour, and I go 80 miles an hour by a police officer who doesn't stop me because I'm flowing with the traffic, I'm breaking the law, but that officer decides it's not worth it to stop me, and they'll spend their time on something else. So there's a lot of administrative discretion here that is being argued over. Republican legislators want there to be little discretion. Almost everybody who's undocumented needs to flow through ICE, whereas Democrats, as we heard in the last half hour of the show, want very little communication between local officers and the federal government.
Mark P. Jones over at Rice University, is this a issue that is going to be a winner for the Republicans in 2017?
Well, this is an issue of balance within the Republican Party. Leaders like Greg Abbott and others realize that within the Republican primary base, the people who actually vote in the Republican primaries and determine who is in office and who is not, immigration is a major salient issue. What Republicans often try to do is find a balance between appeasing those Republican primary voters and showing them that they're serious about immigration reform without pursuing legislation that alienates Hispanic voters and turns them against the Republican Party. Starting in 2011, sanctuary cities has been that middle ground for Republicans where they use it symbolically in their opposition to sanctuary cities as a way to signal to the Republican base that they're serious about immigration, but with the hope that because sanctuary cities are this nebulous concept, with in fact many Democrats denying and arguing, I think in some ways very convincingly, that we don't have sanctuary cities in Texas, that as a result, the backlash among Hispanics is much more reduced than you would say would happen if you repealed the Texas Dream Act or went even further and tried to adopt some type of Arizona SB 1070, show me your papers type legislation. So it's a balancing act for Republicans such as Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Patrick, a way to signal to the base you're serious about immigration without alienating too many Hispanic voters.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Number is 210-614-8980. Elizabeth has called in. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, it's a issue of how much they want to pay for it because these are locally funded jails. You know, they're partially federally funded, but probably about two-thirds comes from the city and the county and the state. And holding somebody for an extra 48 hours, you know, that jaywalked or something like that, is expensive. And so it's an unfunded mandate. And the Republicans want to, you know, pay for it, but they don't seem to want to pay for much. So, you know, and the other thing is that it makes it, the more that you have this kind of indiscreet enforcement, you know, that doesn't take into account the severity of the crime, or it's supposed to now, but, you know, like I said, there's a great deal of discretion, and if they're going okay. to take the sanctuary city thing, you know, to a lower point on the
okay.
the scale of discretion.
Well, we got your point.
It makes it more and more expensive.
Okay, Elizabeth, thank you for that point. And so, so Cal Gilson, she's concerned about the cost this could have on local communities for law enforcement. If you turn law enforcement officers into immigration officers, then they have a lot more jobs to do, and you're going to need more officers.
Yeah, that's right. There are all kinds of concerns that that local police forces have about enhanced immigration enforcement. The idea of community policing is that local police should develop close relationships, on-the-street relationships with the communities they serve, and police in Texas fear that if there is an adversarial relationship, an immigration enforcement relationship priority that they have in Hispanic communities, that will make those communities less willing to come forward and help them in resolving other crimes. And there are the cost elements that Elizabeth was referring to. So I think that the point that I would add on the Republican Party's response to this is that in the most recent statewide elections, Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton, the Tea Party candidates, won over more institutional Chamber of Commerce Republicans by about 2-1. It's the Patrick and the Paxton voters that are up in arms about illegal immigration, but there is now a smaller than it used to be, at least, Chamber of Commerce wing of the Republican Party that thrives on cheap labor. That is the service industry, construction, restaurants, all those kinds of things. So within the Republican Party, there's a division between the Chamber of Commerce that wants the cheap labor and the more populist wing that wants strict enforcement.
Another phone call. Let's go to James. He's on the line. Hi, James. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks, Dave. I just want to comment on something that the sheriff's spoke on earlier. She said that the process, I don't think the process is fair. I'm a veteran. I got arrested. I had a dispute with my girlfriend. I got arrested. I had everything documented. I am a citizen of this country. Went to war. The moment I got into the Bexar County Jail, by that same night, I was confronted by ICE officers. The same night, I didn't have to, and they treated me like, they asked me questions, my immigration status, not, it was just indiscriminately done in a way that I thought, my case has since been dropped. But had it been, if I had a green card and I still was a veteran, if I was undocumented, it would have hurt in a way that I was going to put through the process and my case has since been dropped. But then I would have still be dealing with immigration stuff or being held in the jail 2 or 3 more other days. I lost my job. You know, just that kind of thinking, even though I knew I put myself in that situation, but the way the sheriff described it on the air earlier, it's nothing like that. It's done like you get arrested, everybody come there, and it just cross you over to ICE.
Okay.
So it could be for jaywalking. It could be for anything. It could be for a ticket. You're still going to be put through the process, and you're going to be dealing with immigration. That's why I was listening to the earlier lady, one of your pundits on earlier. She said that she's afraid of her mother, and she's not wrong about that. It could be for a ticket, and the way the sheriff described it as if, like, oh, no, we're picking and choosing, looking by cases. No. It's done to everybody that goes in there, regardless of their citizenship status or not.
Right,
that's
James,
what I wanted to say.
James, thanks for that call. Thanks for helping us figure this out. So Mark P. Jones, you know, as people do get arrested, family members get deported, or people are concerned about, the harsh enforcement of deportation laws, does this have an effect with Latino voters?
Well, it has not. It really hasn't to the effect that you might think, in the sense that because you have to draw a line between any sort of effort to repeal sanctuary cities within the impact on deportation, or who gets caught up, and then the impact on deportation. In many ways, it actually has created more of a backlash within the Democratic Party, and something that President Obama listened to and responded to during the latter part of his second term. In that, as the caller noted, there is a tendency, once you're within the dragnet or net of ICE, it doesn't matter if it was a traffic ticket, a speeding ticket, or a homicide, you're swept into the federal system. And we've seen hundreds of thousands of people, often many people whose spouse is a U.S. citizen, whose children are a U.S. citizen, deported for a simple traffic violation, or often for simply being in the wrong place at the wrong time. They being in a parking lot where a robbery occurred earlier, the police show up and they just grab everybody in. And for someone who is an undocumented immigrant, that can be, one moment they are with their family, the next day they're in detention, and then sometime between 2 weeks or a month later, they're back in El Salvador or Honduras. So I think right. The indiscriminate aspect of it is something that, is a real worry. And it is something, though, that
sure.
has not been modified over time. That is, we've seen fewer and fewer of these types
okay.
of deportations, although they still do occur.
They still happen. Okay, Cal Gilson, professor of political science at SMU, and Mark P. Jones, professor of political science at Rice University, thank you for joining us. And thanks for tuning us in. This is The Source on KSTX.